Somewhere in the darkness, there's a man they call the Skipper, fast asleep, dreaming of gold. He wakes before the sun does, even though he'd rather stay in bed. Curses the cold in Minnesota, why's it always so damn cold? He's got a job.
You're listening to Stonecast, Curling in the Twin Cities with Jordan Wickland and Christopher Lisney. Hello, this is Chris with Stonecast. This summer, Jordan and I sat down with Rich Runin and did an extensive interview. We're going to be presenting that interview in two different podcasts, and this is part one. I hope you enjoy it. I thought that this quote from the 2011 Minnesota Lawyer magazine by Nancy Crotty really summed it all up. This attorney's last name is pronounced Runin, and there's nothing he likes more than ruining an opponent's day, whether in the courtroom or on the ice. Dubbed Dr. Doubles because of his wicked and accurate takeouts, he has competed in 15 national championships, 4 Olympic trials, 2 world championships. In this past season, his teams won the national championship, placed second in the Olympic trials, and tied for 5th in the worlds in Las Vegas. He also curls on Tuesday, where he remains undefeated against Christopher.
That's true.
Yeah. I've only played against you directly once. I've always been traveling when our team has played your team.
You have, and I thought that was on purpose. No. I thought you were a little scared, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah, I think I actually subbed for you, Chris, one of the nights you were gone right after you and I just returned from the House of Hearts spiel.
Oh, yeah.
Because you were curling with my buddy Jeff, and then Chris was like, hey, we're playing Richie. Can you sub? I said, oh, sure. We just had quite a weekend.
Yeah, that Tuesday night is usually one of the toughest when you come back from the House of Hearts to even make it to league, because you're still on that 96-hour recovery period.
You're still
that
coming
need.
Down a little bit. Yeah.
But that's a fun spiel, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I was sad to have missed it this year, especially after all the American curling hoopla been going on lately.
So. Yeah, we need to get Chris down there. It's about as fun as it gets.
It's technically up there. I will if they want me to be a celebrity skip. I'm all over. I'm all over it.
Well, we'll have to check with the board. I don't know.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about what we're drinking today.
All right.
So I, on the way home from work last night, I thought, well, I don't really know what Rich drinks. So I called Wilmer, and he says he drinks anything that's cold.
And I said, that's true.
I'm like, okay, well, that makes it cheap. But I was thinking we were going to have gin and tonics. But then instead, I went to Certix looking for specific gin, and they had this ham, Iberico ham, which is I'm going to read the description because it made me buy the ham, which caused me to buy all this other stuff. So Yamon Iberico, I'm sure I pronounced that right. Coming entirely from black-footed pigs grazing fallen acorns on the Iberian Peninsula, Iberico is delicate yet nutty and intense, and one of the most prized meats in the world. Hmm. So I got that.
And we're also drinking this Pseudo Sioux Pale Ale, which I really like. So,
yeah, earlier I thought we were going to have the gin and tonic, so I brought chips and salsa, and then Chris texted me saying, hey, why don't you pick up some beer? And as I was walking into Certix, they had a sale on a couple different beers. And this is one of my favorites from Decorah, Iowa, where I went to school at Luther College. Yeah, it's a hazy American citrusy IPA.
Yeah, it's really good. I like it a lot. I haven't had it, but I'm definitely going to buy it.
Rich tells us he's an IPA man.
Yeah, I like all pale ales and EPAs as well, like Summit and Sierra and Torpedo. Sierra Torpedo I like a lot. So, yeah, this is really nice. I like it.
Well, I'm glad that you joined our podcast. So is Runin Finnish?
Yeah, it's actually pronounced Ruhanen, but no, I don't tell people that. You know where we got this quote that you talked about in the Minnesota Lawyer? I the first time I said that was, it's ruining, like I'm ruining your day. It just makes it easier. And I said that in law school once to my professor because he kept pronouncing my name wrong. And in law school, they call on you and then you have to talk in front of the class and answer these questions. And if you're not prepared, they make you look like a fool, right? So he kept pronouncing it wrong. I said, it's ruining, like I'm ruining your day. And he said, well, maybe vice versa. We'll see. And he proceeded to call on, or to talk to me for 45 minutes in front of the class. So it was a long day for me, but I think it went all right. But so ever since then, when someone says it, I just say, yeah, it's like ruining, like I'm ruining your day. Hmm. And so it's a, people don't forget it when you say that. So mm-hmm. a lot of people say ruhonin because that's kind of how it really looks. But it, when it's finished, you just kind of mm-hmm. roll through it. So
could you say it again without, when you said it like really aggressively, just how, say it how you would say it.
Ruhonin.
Ruhonin.
Yeah.
Ruhonin. All right, I'll try to get that for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm. It's finished, so you know when we, I tried to get my wife to name Nicholas Paco Ruhonen. I thought it'd be a great name for a hockey player, you know, P A K K O though, you know, and she didn't go for it. So then I said, "How about the middle name?" She said, "No," and he ends up being a goalie. It would have been the greatest name I think ever, but she didn't like it.
Stonecast is supported by our friends at the Once Upon a Crime Mystery Bookstore, 604 West 26th Street in Minneapolis. Not only do they have a fantastic collection of mysteries, thrillers, and crime novels, they host some of the best author events in the area. Check them out on the web at www.onceuponacrimebooks.com. That's www.onceuponacrimebooks.com.
That was very nice.
Thank you.
That's the dream, I think.
Yeah.
Right on. Well, I mean, I kind of got that mentality from, I think after, it was after Nationals, I think before they had named the high performance athletes. And I think you were quoted along with the rest of the team. It's like, are we all going to be named again? Are we all coming back as a team? And that sort of ethos kind of came through in your quotes. You're like, oh, I hope so. But if not, you know, wish everybody the best. And then I believe all four of you were named again.
Yeah, we were. That was great because, you know, I feel like I was told 5 years ago I was too old then, right? We don't want a guy to be 47 in the next Olympics, and we really want you to coach, and I think you can do a great job and you can really help out the high performance program, but you're a little too old is kind of the way the way I took it. And you know, I had some things going on in my career. I was going to be involved in a huge case, so I didn't push it too hard. And I just, at that time, I said, well, just let me go in the combine, you know, and let's see what happens. If I don't pull my weight, I'm too old, I can't do what everybody else can do, we'll deal with it. But I didn't get that chance, and it turned out to be okay because that was a big couple years in my career. When we got back into it, then I played on a couple of teams, played with Farbelow for a couple years and played with John Benton and Todd Burr. And we took second at Nationals, and I played very well at that Nationals. I think I was the highest ranked player overall.
You were I watched those Nationals. You were incredible.
And then to
except for your attitude.
Yeah,
your attitude kind of sucked.
And then thanks. Then I got this opportunity to play with Heater and the guys to be their fifth man, essentially. I was more of a coach. I played in St. Paul Cash Spiel, and we won it because Chris couldn't be there for that weekend. But other than that, I didn't play a whole lot. I played a couple games during the year other than that. But I kind of took on the coaching role, I think, for our team. And I think it went really well. And, you know, we got to the final three game, 2 out of 3 against Schuster, and win the first one and unfortunately drop the next two. So that was pretty disappointing for us. And then to, you know, I asked for my release from the team because I had this opportunity to step in with Phil and Colin and Greg. And Heater was really generous and said, yeah, we'll just beat you and then we'll take you as our fifth man. And so it didn't quite turn out that way, but we beat them and we took Chris as our fifth man. It was after this, you know, the run we had at Worlds after starting off terribly and to have him have the high performance team say, or the high performance program and the people involved say, hey, I think you can still play, was kind of cool. Mm-hmm. And I'm not, you know, and what you're talking about of that quote is I said, look, if they want three of you and not me, I'm not going to hold anyone back. So I can
find a team. Yeah,
yeah, I can find a team to play with, and I think I can still play at that level, and I think I've proved it. So I was really happy when they said, hey, we're going to give you guys a chance and, you know, get you in the program. And I think we're all committed. We're all practicing. I mean, I threw three times in the last 2 weeks in the middle of the summer. So we want to give it our all. And if it turns out I can't do it 4 years from now, maybe it's 2 years, maybe whatever, and maybe I can bring these guys along. My goal is to take one more shot at it and mm-hmm. go hard for 4 years. And then I think I'm done, yeah. at least at that level, you know.
That's cool. That's really
cool. You should retire from that is the year I beat you.
Yeah.
On Tuesday nights.
Well, I probably would retire if that ever happened.
Have you talked to Heath?
Yeah, I have. Heath and I have always been pretty good friends. You know, we've always got along well, and unfortunately, Heath's dad died, so I gave him a call, and you know, I had just heard he is kind of kept kind of private, and you know, I feel really bad for him because I know he's close to his dad and stuff, and so it helped. He helped him out at the insurance agency and stuff. So yeah, I've talked to Heath, just more about that though. I didn't know at the time. I haven't talked to him since he's not in the program anymore. I think that was a. I don't think he applied. I think, you know, from what I've heard, I'm sure I'll talk to him soon. And I think he still wants to play, but I think he just had, it's a big commitment. I mean, I don't think people realize what you have to do to be in that program. And, you know, Heath is married and has two young daughters, and they're in a lot of sports and activities, and it's tough. You know, you need the support of your family. Not that he doesn't have it, he does, but it's just you can only do it so many years, and he's in his 40s also. So, you know, I had to sit back and think, hey, do I want to take another 4 years of that? And I had to talk to my family, and you know, I got kids that are 16 and 13, and you want to see their sports, and you miss a little bit, and you know, it's a big commitment. The Vikings are my favorite. So I've had season tickets for 22 years, since 1996.
So you saw the catch?
Oh, yeah. I was there.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. It was so awesome.
It was electric.
We went absolutely berserk. I have never been more excited in a game in my life. And it just sucks because it's a hell of a lot more meaningless considering we got crushed the next game.
Yep.
But it was great to be there. It was the best play I've ever seen to end a game, and it was right in our end zone. I sit like 10 rows up, right to the right. Like if I'm looking at the field, to the right side of the post, and it came down the left side, right in that end zone. Yeah. So we were my buddy Ben Schmidt and I, we've had season tickets together for that long. This is not a TSR thing. I pay for them with my money, and we've had curling royalties. Yeah. Right. We've had such a great time, and for the first time in 22 years, the last couple of years at the new place, we've been able to sell our tickets for, you know, actually make money off of them.
Yeah.
But of course, we had to pay a seat licensing fee, so that was a little spendy.
You know, I'm a pretty big Vikings fan, and I watched that game actually in St. Paul there at the Curling Club. There was some, I can't remember, but I was doing some commentating, and I was kind of irritated that I had to commentate because I was like, I really want to watch the game. Mm-hmm. And I started watching. Weren't we up at the first half or something? I don't know. I can't remember, but whenever I watched it, like, I missed all the good stuff. And then we were sitting up there, and Wilmer won that. It was the
over 60?
No.
Oh, sorry.
No.
Sorry, Mark.
No, I think it was the big spiel. It must have been the big spiel.
Sure, because it was the middle of January.
Yeah, and so we were all up in the top, and we were watching, and you could just see everything just going to and everybody was depressed. And
it's happening again.
There was a couple. There was a couple Packers fans that were snarky.
Yeah.
Oh man.
And then all of a sudden that happened.
Was Grabowski there?
And it just like it just exploded. It was super cool. I think it was a lot of snow that night.
Yeah.
It stormed.
Yeah.
But they didn't deserve to win that game. They played at the second half of that game.
Yeah.
And so part of me is like, yeah, that was miraculous, and that's great, and it's finally some karma going our way. But it didn't bode well for the next game.
No,
in my mind, I agree.
I was concerned. Everybody thought we were going to crush them, and I was just concerned because after a big play like that, you get a letdown. And I'm sure the coaches talked about it. I'm sure, you know, I love Zimmer. I think he's great.
Agreed.
But yeah. I knew I had this sense. I thought we were going to win. I'm not going to lie. But because I'm a homer. 110%.
Big homer here.
Yeah, so I thought we were going to win.
So you're like a glass half full guy.
Yeah,
see, he's a glass half empty guy.
Yeah, I don't doubt that at all. I know him well enough now to know that.
I'm not a glass half. There's like some witty comment about that. You could just say, I'm just always thirsty.
I could go on about sports forever.
About
Vikings.
The worst thing about last season, not the worst season, the worst thing is that we lost in that game, and it was really upsetting.
Yeah.
But when we, who is our rookie, Cook? When he went down, that game.
Oh, Dalvin Cook.
He was incredible.
He was leading the league in yards at that
point. It was just making the – I was just like, oh, my God. We've got everything. Everything we need.
Yeah, well, hopefully he'll be back. Anyway, and I'm a big fan of the Kirk Cousins deal.
We'll give him the podcast bump.
You know? Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Copy Atkinson.
Love it.
Yeah.
Price is a great guy, by the way.
Yeah, he threw some shade at the Twins and – You did not respond, as I now expect you to respond. You kind of went along with it.
Yeah, well, you know.
They're only five games back.
Man. I didn't think they were. I thought they played a little better than they were last year, and I expected more to see what we're seeing this year, although I did not think it would be Sano and Buxton that are struggling. And
when I was a kid, I used to listen to baseball, and I'd fall asleep to it. And then you'd wake up to the morning show. Like, the radio would stay on. It was like, good morning, good morning. And I was like, great. What a great day we're going to have here. Should we go to us?
Judy Garland sang that, right?
Well, this wasn't. This was like a bunch of farmers anyway. Doing. Yeah, I was mimicking Judy Garland. Yeah.
Are we supposed to talk curling a little bit more or not?
Well, let's
just segue. Okay. So okay, so you got the sticky stuff from what's his face?
From Cole.
Cole Aldridge, right? Yeah. What is the Rich Runin sticky stuff on the ice? Like, what do you bring to the every match?
What do I bring to every match?
That is specific to you. The guys go, I don't know about that.
I can't even think. You mean like just an attitude, I think?
No,
maybe?
just like, what, you know, anything. I'm sort of a freak about, like, I need to have ultra short fingernails before a Bonspiel. And I freak out if I forget to cut my nails, and it's really stupid. But then at the end of the weekend, I've got those little cuts on the side of my thumbs. Mm-hmm. Anyway, like the one when we were in Carolina, I bought that Bacitracin specifically because I knew that was going to happen.
Yeah, this is so we're at a Bonspiel in Carolina. We're drinking in the hotel room, which we had a great time. And Jordan is like, hey, does anybody want any Bacitracin? I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, it's great for the cuticles. I'm like, oh, great.
And but middle camp was suffering on Saturday. Oh. It's like, I'm going to need some of that Bacitracin.
Well, I can tell you. Maybe
now that he's thought about it.
I would think that the thing that I want to do or that I always bring is we need to get there at least a half hour before the game starts because I'm old and I need to stretch. And I don't think you can be ready to play at a high level unless you're there early. And so I have been on teams where it's, you know, you're playing at 9:30 and or you have to – let's say practice at 9:30, you know, throw your shots and stuff. And we get there at 9:20 and I do not like that. And, so for me, it's like, let's go in the morning. Let's get up, let's eat breakfast. I don't sleep that well anyway, because I sleep about 6 hours a night. Cause you have to, when you have 20 hours of business to take care of during the day with work and curling. And so I don't sleep a lot. And so I'm always like, let's go. Let's get out of here and let's get there and let's stretch and get ready to go and get pumped up and amped up and ready to play. And I think I'm going to throw Chris Plies under the bus. He's one of my really, 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 really good friends. And I think but I used to jump on him when I played, wake him up. He wouldn't get out of bed and I'd be, let's go. And I'd jump on him and push him around, throw him off the bed, and he'd get really pissed at me and punch me. But that's kind of what we had to do with him.
Though.
Yeah, but he doesn't. He's not one that needs to do that, but I do. And so if we're on the same car, I'm like, you got to get your butt out of bed and let's get going here. So I would say that's what I that's what I do.
All
right. It really bugs me. I don't want to be there 10 minutes before.
I like that. Like I mean, it's not anywhere in the same league or anything, but except on Tuesday was when we are in the same league. I like being there at least a half hour, usually more. Just because I think mentally I need a transition from what I was doing before.
I agree.
What would you say surprises you the most from the curler you are now from what you sort of imagined you would be 15, 20 years ago as you were sort of entering this competitive world?
I would say I got a few things on this. If you had asked me 10 years ago when we went to the World Championships and the year that I played with Craig Brown and we were – the best team in the country, I don't think anybody would dispute that, including the next year when we didn't win the Olympic trials in 2009 in Colorado. We A-sided everything. We A-sided Brantford and Portage La Prairie. We lost like three in a row to get triple Lindy'd. But other than that, we ended up qualifying in every tournament. We won more money than I think most teams had ever won on the tour. And we lost in the trials, lost in the 3-4 game. Very disappointing because by far that was the best team I had played on to that date, and we were the best team in the country, and it wasn't close. And we lost, and Schuster won with John and those guys, John and Ike and those guys. And so, you know, that to me was the most disappointing year. And when you look back on it and you say, I thought I was in decent shape. I mean, I was a lot younger. But I have worked so much harder now. And the thing we didn't do then was we didn't look at stats. I realized, after that next year when we got in the high performance program and when I started playing with Tyler and Chris and Colin and some various other people before that, but it was basically Chris and Tyler at the time, you started taking stats, keeping stats, and it was sort of our money ball moment in curling. And you start realizing they start keeping like your draws, your tap backs, your hits, your hard weight hits, your normal weight hits, and your lightweight hits. And you start seeing the stats over 20, 30, 40 games, and you go, geez, my intern soft weight wasn't as good as everything else, and it was 10% lower, 8% lower. And you start to realize, if I could figure out what they're doing, I can play to that intern, I can play to that outturn, you know, if someone's outturn or intern is weaker. And it absolutely was a money ball moment for me. After 25 games, I realized that my intern soft weight was a little bit, I would flop it a little bit and it'd curl a lot more. So I went out and threw 5 days in a row or 5 times in a row of practice, and I threw all intern soft weight hits basically except for a few draws, and I raised that stat up by the end of the year by 5%, right? So then because there are people, if you've curled at our level, you'll be like, this guy can't make an intern. This guy's definitely 5% weaker on his intern or his outturn or whatever, or he's going to miss a hit versus we'd rather have him draw any time than hit. And if you become known for that, it's a problem. And there are people in our game over the last 10 years that have been known for that. So I think that's a big change, is just the stats and understanding that. And now with Jerry Gertz and Curling Zone and all these stats, we can look at stats and say, boy, these guys are, you know, 80% to win, tied with the hammer. So if we have to take a chance in the ninth end, or it would be the seventh end on the tour because we only play 8, we got to take this chance to score our 2 so we can be up 1 versus if it's a heart. In other words, we can draw for 1 to tie, but we're 80% to lose. Or we can play a shot that we might be 50% to make to be up 1 where we're now 70% to win or whatever. You have to take that into account, right? And we didn't do that back then. Also, like I said, we've now figured out sports psychology, which I believe is a huge deal in this game. You know, I've played with people that couldn't make a shot when it really counted, when there's a lot of pressure on the line. And they've, you know, some of those people have figured it out now with sports psychology. And I think just dealing with team dynamics and things like that and knowing things that you can say, the sports psychology, and Carly Anderson's been awesome for that, our USCA sports psychologist. And then I would just say working out. Like, I thought I was in great shape in 2009 or 8 when we went to Worlds. And there is no question at November of last year, even though I was sort of a fifth man, I was a fifth man, I was sort of a coach, I should say, more than anything, I weighed 189 pounds, which is what I got married at 20 years ago. I was in better shape than ever, and you need to be at this level now. And so, but at the same time, I'm, you know, when you lose out in the Olympic trials, you gain 15 pounds in a hurry drinking beer and soaking your sorrows and eating pizza. So I literally gained like 10 pounds in probably 3 weeks. And, you know, that's just the, because you're just trying to eat better and you're trying to do that stuff. And then I lost a little bit, and then we went to Worlds and, you know, tried to stay in shape, and I'm still working out all summer. But so those are the things. I mean, it's changed. Curling has changed. And then, of course, the biggest thing probably is sweeping. We realized if I knew what I knew now about sweeping, we would have destroyed everybody. Of course, so would everybody. I mean, we used to sweep those big brown, those big hair brooms, 10-inch hair brooms. And if we knew that one person could sweep and make it curl, you know, with the hair brooms and that, it's crazy. Like, we talk about it all the time. Like, did this really happened?
Like, how did this pass us by?
Yeah,
how were we not practicing and just stumble upon this?
That's a great point. You know why? Because we don't practice sweeping. We never practice sweeping. You know, you might go one-on-one and just, you know, I mean, I'm sorry, when you're practicing by yourself, you might get up and sweep like we do for mixed doubles. I do that all the time, but I didn't really think about it like, you know, oh, well, that one kind of picked, or that one curled a ton. I don't know, whatever. You're just playing on practice ice, and it's not always that good. I'll never forget, we were playing Todd Burr, and in the St. Paul Cash, I think it was the semifinals. This was the year that everybody found out about it, 3 years ago. And we're playing Farbs, and I don't remember if it was Pottinger. Yeah, Pottinger, I think, was throwing third, and he threw a shot. And I looked down, he was a third of the rock on that rock, on the guard, and we're going to get a bundle, right? Like, we're in for three or four here, and the game's going to be over. I saw that it was going to wreck. I turned around. They called sweeping with one sweeper, and they had figured it out about 3 weeks before we did. And it fell back, and he missed the guard, apparently, from what my teammate said, by about a quarter inch. And I'm like, that rock was on it. They must have accidentally ticked it or something. I couldn't figure it out. Well, then we went, Dan Reel and I went to Blaine and practiced, and we just swept the crap out of a rock one way. We made one fall back 4 feet and one curl 3 feet, and I was just like, are you kidding me? And this was literally 4 days later, and Todd and Doug had told me that they kind of figured this out, and they, by watching Gushue, because Gushue figured it out for anybody, obviously. And that's the difference. Like, teams at that level, Gushue's out there practicing sweeping. He figured it out before anyone else. And Charlie Thomas's team, they figured it out. And, you know, there was teams that were, you couldn't beat them if they knew how to sweep, and you didn't. You couldn't beat them. And then now with the new brooms, it's completely back
and to the way it should
be.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you're now on grade. You know, it used to be we could take a rock, maybe people might disagree with me, but I would say 9 to 12 feet with the good brooms. Mm-hmm. And you could make it, you know, now you're talking on good ice. This is on good ice. You're talking 6 feet probably. In my opinion, if you haven't noticed, there's been a lot more missed last shots than there was for 3 years there, right? Like, you mm-hmm. can, you got guys like Ben Hebert and Mark Kennedy. They can wait till the last 20 feet and sweep it 6 feet. Yeah. You know, now you can't do that. You got to be right on top of it. You got to be ready to go, and you're only carrying it probably 6 feet. And we started doing testing, and we've got our own opinions, and, you know, about how we should sweep. And I don't really want to say it here today because I think, you know, but
we should sweep hard.
We now have really done testing, hard. Though. We're practicing sweeping. Mm-hmm. We never did that before. So when you're talking about the changes in the last 10 years, these are the changes that you're seeing. And that's why teams are better. Teams are making run, double run backs like it's nothing now. And I think this five rock rule, though, is huge. It's going to change everything.
That's my next question.
It's crazy. I can tell you.
You excited for it?
Oh, yeah. We played in the last slam in April where we qualified and just lost to Howard and Greg. Unfortunately, we missed our last shot. If we make, we got like a three-quarter open hit, and if we make it, and we just got to hit it anywhere, and he's got a pretty tough shot, and we probably go to the, I think we went, I think that was the quarters, I don't think it was the semis, and we would have been in the semis. And this five rock rule is insane. I mean, like, we it's the most aggressive game in history. My biggest worry is we're going to run out of time, because as a skip, you have to think. We always think a lot. Now we have to think five times as much. And, like, there was a time we were playing Gushu, and we put a guard up, and I think we were down one without, and he does the chip over. And this is not in the last end either. This is, like, the, I want to say, the fifth end, and we're down one or two. And then he chips another one over, and we throw a fifth rock up front on the center line. You would never do that normally, mm-hmm. right? But in the five rock rule, he can't hit it. So now he's got to play a tap or something. And there's all these guards. If he chips it again, we'll go under. You know, I mean, it's just, it was crazy. Five guards, five rocks thrown, five guards, and every shot's been made, right? Mm-hmm. Every shot's been made. So it's insane. It's going to be fun. It's going to I'm kind of excited for it, but I'm like a curling geek, and I like strategy, and that's why I think I skip, and mm-hmm. I think I'm pretty decent at it. But I don't know what to do half the time. I'm not going to lie. Like, you know, what do you do when they go top four and there's a corner guard, and you go top eight, and then there's another corner guard? You guard it. Right? Yeah. Like, you never throw a guard in the old days, like with the four rock rule. So it's crazy.
People are going to have to start thinking again.
Oh, but the problem is like, I just saw something. Fun scenes. I just got an email, and Blaine wants to play it in league. I don't think we should be playing it in league, guys, because you're talking, it's already, you know, we always have those people that play as slow as hell, and it's ridiculous, and they get through six ends in an hour and a half. I mean, I'm sorry, in 2 hours instead of an hour and a half. And now you got these league curlers thinking even more. You're gonna have games that will get through four, maybe five ends in 2 hours with league curlers. So I think it's a bad idea, just to people that are listening for their clubs, just because I think four is plenty, and because the five rock rule is, I think, made more for the higher competitive.
It's like when you go to the pros in the NBA, you've got a longer 3-point line. You know, mm-hmm. if you're gonna play with the big boys or gals,
but it's going to be interesting. And there's a lot. There's going to have to be a lot more run backs. You know, it does help the team that's down. Definitely, you're not out of a game, because you can. You're gonna, rather than peeling corner guards, you're gonna see a lot of draws around the corner to freeze to the one that they just went under. Whereas before, we'd peel it and just give them their deuce. That's fine. Take your deuce, and we're up two or we're up three, and you know, take your deuce, and we'll go home with the hammer.
It'll be fun.
But there's rocks everywhere, and I just hope they. I kind of hope the U.S. I think we were playing 38 minutes in Calgary when we were there. For the final slam, and I think we need maybe 40. You know, there's a couple games that came down close, but most of the time we just play faster if we have to. But it's nice to be able to actually think about a shot. And I really think what they should do is go to 8-end games and then just extend a couple minutes. You know, I think all the slams go to 8-end games, but I've heard, I'm not sure if it's going to pass. I thought it was a done deal this year that even nationals and worlds were going to be 8-ends, but I don't think it's done yet from what I'm hearing. So
I have a sports psychology question to ask you. So last year I really enjoyed watching you and your teams play at these all these various events. I'm not a super curling geek. I don't watch a lot of them, but I have watched quite a bit of your games. And like, I think when you were at Worlds, I think I was watching a Timberwolves game, and then you came on your TSR commercial on the couch with Colin Huffman.
Yep.
I was at a slumber party. Like, I was at a hotel, and I had
Were you at Rich's house?
No. We had eight or six 8-year-old girls at some water park, and they'd all gone to bed, and I was in the other room watching curling, because I think it was on
NBC Sports.
ESP3. Oh, yeah, NBC Sports. Yeah. And I was flipping between that and the Timberwolves, and you were playing.
Wait. You were switching off curling?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, my God.
Curling's really boring.
A curler switching off curling?
Come on.
Come on.
Okay, well, anyway.
I am.
No.
But all right, I'm disappointed in you.
Okay.
Again. Well,
thanks. Listen, get used to it. But the thing I noticed about you, when you won Nationals, that's got to be a really big deal, right? Big high.
Oh, my God.
You guys played great.
Played awesome. We were, I mean, I don't think there was any question that week we were the best team there. I don't even think it was close. I mean, Heater's team was great, don't get me wrong, but we dominated just about every game except the one game we lost, and we missed a three-quarter open hit for three against Burr when we lost that game, and that game's over if we make that shot. And so I didn't mean
to puff you up. You don't have to go on and say how great you were.
I don't think I've ever played in a national, and I've been in, you said 15, I would have guessed 18, but whatever it is.
I could be wrong.
Yeah.
I have a hard time counting.
You know what? I don't know. I'm so damn old, I don't even know. You're probably right. But the bottom line is, you know, like, I've been at so many, and I've played really well in a lot of them. But that, as a team, you know, as a team effort, I just felt like we couldn't miss, and I felt like we were going to win it, even when we got to the playoffs, even when we had to play Heater in the last game. That is a great team, you know, with Tom and Corey and Chris. You're talking about in Heater, probably the top four players at any position, or definitely top two at that their position in the country.
Present company excluded.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but they're not counting you guys. I mean, we're not. I don't want to think I'm going overboard here.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I mean, we overslept through the combine, so we weren't eligible for high performance.
Okay. Yeah.
No,
yeah,
I declined my invitation. I was busy.
Yeah. But you know, when we gave up, I don't remember if it was in the fifth. I think it was in the fifth end. I took a chance and probably shouldn't have. We were tied. We were tied with the hammer. Could have got the blank. I decided to draw, and I think I came a little deep, and they ended up stealing one. Yeah. And I don't remember the exact thing, but we got done, and I said, hey, guys, my fault. I expected to make that draw because the way I'd been playing, and I made it pretty close, but not close enough. And Chris, I think, froze on it, or Heater did on his first one of beauty, and we were giving up one no matter what. I just said, let's just go get our two, and if we get our two next at one of the next two ends, we're going to win. And we got it the next end or the seventh, I can't remember. And I'm like, I just felt like we were going to win. I've never been more confident in, you know, 18, 15 nationals, whatever it's been, the way we were playing. And when you have a horse like Colin sweeping, I mean, Jesus, I've never seen a better sweeper. It's insane. I think he's top five in the world, definitely, without question, with Ben Hebert and Gallant. And
how about Adam Broad?
Well, I don't think so, but I'm not sure.
And then you went to Worlds.
Yep.
And you guys your games didn't turn out the way you wanted to.
Early, yeah.
Yeah, but you're I was really impressed by, like, you have to go do those pressers afterwards. Yeah,
it's tough.
Yeah, and you were like, I don't know how you keep up. Like, I would be like, I'm pissed off. Like, this is the worst thing ever. You know, so I don't want to talk to you.
One thing I forgot to say.
You didn't
when you
go
said,
Denny Green on the
press. You said, what about the last 10 years or 20 years or whatever has changed? You also grow as you get older. I mean, in my younger days, I would have been swearing and screaming and yelling, and I might have even said, Greg, how the hell could you miss that shot, you know? Because it's easy to say that when you're not the skip. Most people don't know how bad the ice was in our last playoff game at Worlds. It had got humid. It was 13 seconds hog-to-hog on one side of the sheet and 14.5 on the other. And wow. We're talking, that's about throwing it 15 feet heavier, you know, something like that. And you couldn't even read the LeGuires or whatever is on that. You couldn't read it because there was so much frost. And we had been talking about it all game. And Gushue, you know, he outskipped me in that game because he had played on it before, and he knew we're throwing normal weight hits. We're not throwing anything light. We're not throwing any hack waders. We're not throwing any board waders because it's crappy. You got to just fire it through the frost. And we tried, we should have got two in the fourth end, I think it was, or the second end. I rolled out because I threw a hack waiter, and it just cut, like, way more than it had all week. And, you know, he outskipped me because he had played on it before, and I didn't. But we figured it out going into the last half of the game. And on that draw that we had in the eighth, if we make that draw, I threw a guard on this side to hopefully make him draw. He did it, and he went right behind the tee, right behind the button, and we have one coming down, and we freeze on that. We're stealing one, and we're up one in the playoffs mm-hmm. with two ends left. And I told our guys, you have to sweep it right away. They didn't jump on it right away. We hard dust right away no matter what because it just dies sometimes, and we left that rock a foot and a half short, and Brad makes a great draw to the edge of the button for two, and that's mm-hmm. the game. And I'm telling you, when you're playing on that kind of, and from that point on, you can. I'm not ripping on the ice makers. There's nothing they can do in Vegas when it gets humid. Yeah. It never gets humid. Yeah. It did. And from that point on, they scraped between the fifth end in every game. But in our game, it was the first one that it had been humid at.
You're the guinea pig.
Yeah, yeah. And it was so disappointing because if we get that rock there, we might win and we might be in the Final Four and have beat Canada twice in two days. Because to beat them on Thursday night when it's the TSN game was, you know, probably one of the greatest moments ever because nobody gave us a chance.
That was a good
presser. Yeah, nobody gave us a chance, right? And they're great guys. I love Gushu's team. They're really nice guys. But they didn't think we'd beat them, and they didn't think we had a chance the next day either, and we gave it everything we had, and it came down to last rock. He had to draw the 4 foot to win, and he made it, you know, even on that crappy ice, but he got to throw the fast side, not the hard side.
Right.
But, yeah, so it was it was a fantastic event, and Greg grew as a skip. I grew as a skip. As a calling skip, calling the game, not a shooting skip, and as a third, and I think our whole team.
We call that bottle skip.
Yeah. We're ready. We're ready to go. You know, like we're excited about this year.
That's
great. And hope that we can keep playing at that level.
And you're doing it the same kind of like you're still going to play third.
Yep. I'm going to play third. Greg's going to skip. His last half of the week, he was the best skip, definitely other than maybe Scotland and Canada, he was the best skip there. The last half of the week, and he was still right up with those guys. So I have all the confidence in Greg. The funny thing is he's so calm, and that's why I think he's better in that position. I get a little worked up, and at third, it's no big deal because I can still settle down and don't have to make that last shot. And he's just like, I'm like, do you want to throw the hit or the draw? I don't know. You call it. And I'm like, well, I think the draw is the right shot. Okay, and then I'm going to throw it, and boom, he makes it. You know what I mean? So it's really kind of weird for a skip to have that kind of mentality. But I think it makes him so relaxed, and he's good shooter.
Don't you think that shows confidence in the team, though?
Oh, sure. Yeah, we work really well together. And for us to just have come together in January, right, or December in Eveleth, and we won Eveleth, you know, our first spiel together, we won. I mean, we're...
street. The skipper isn't certain, but he thinks that maybe this could be the year when they defeat the world forever and they bring that medal home. Now it seems years away, he's taking it day by day. When it comes, he'll be ready to play, because he knows he's got the curve. Darkness, there's a man they call the skipper, fast asleep, dreaming of gold.